While this is loading, our next speaker is Dr. Leonel Valdivia, and he will be talking to us about free trade agreements and public health in Chile. Dr. Valdivia has a PhD in educational sciences from the University of Manchester, England, and he has held academic posts in Chile, the UK, and the US, and has managed public health programs in Peru, Nicaragua, and the Dominican Republic. At present, he is Vice Dean for International Relations and Global Health at the School of Public Health at the University of Chile. So, welcome.
Thank you. Well, we were talking about the northern entrance into the continent, Canada. Now we go to the southern entrance to Chile. Very grateful that I've been allowed to come and make a presentation to this very representative sample of the Trade and Health Forum. I'm very glad that we have an opportunity of talking about Chile. Also, hopefully, this will be the beginning of getting those field stories that our colleague was talking about. Although this is a little bit of an academic presentation from an academic, and although I am in the field, we are still in the Ivory Tower, both Ivory Tower as a university and also as public health. And this is story of, I would say, public health waking up in Chile. So this is beginning to realize in the past, I would say no more than a year and a half, that the voice of public health, as SIPA says in his in its slogan, has not been a reality in Chile. I wanted to talk about Chile trade liberalization a little bit for those of you who do not are not familiar with that, and asking, you know, who really benefits. The impact on the health of Chilean, what do we know about the impact? The need for a research agenda, for what purpose? Is being from academia, that's what we are interested in, and we feel that we have a responsibility to be involved in that research. Just a little bit about Chile, for those who may think it's a small town in rural Wisconsin. Chile is a very long and thin country, the southern tip of South America. 16.5 million inhabitants, divided in 15 regions, highly centralized, 40% lives in the Santiago metropolitan region. Per capita income is fairly low, 4,500, but with the adjustment to purchasing power is 10,000. Human Development Index is 08, number 37 in the global ranking. Life expectancy at birth is 77.9, and for women, this is average, and for women is a little higher. Fairly high literacy rate, thanks to universal primary education since 1920, 95.7%. School enrollment rate is 81, combined the two, the both men and women, and 13.7% of the population are considered below the poverty line, and the income inequality is way over 50%, fairly compared very badly with other countries, really. Income distribution is fairly uneven in the, as you can see, and the progress has not been very marked, as you can see, from 96 to 2006, really. We haven't improved much in terms of income distribution. During our democratic governments, we have experienced reduction in poverty, quite considerable, but social inequalities persist. I already mentioned income inequalities, but here is another indicator on years of formal education. By social quintiles, a very large difference between the quintile number one and number five in access to formal education and hence to possibilities of a better future, as well as participation in the labor force, a big difference between males and females. And also no mass change between the year 96 and 2006. In 10 years' time, it has been some change, but not really substantial in terms of the disparity between between the two sexes. And this is not moving. let me see. I'll try this. That's it. Now, a little bit about the free trade agreement experience. I wanted to put this quote here. The economic success of the Chilean development model based on free market policies and active integration into the world market is frequently praised, pay no attention to that typo, by economists and politicians around the world. In the second half of the 70s and throughout the 80s, with the military regime implemented a neoliberal economic transformation with export promotion, diversification, and favorable conditions for foreign investors and a gradual and unilateral, I should say, I'm going to mention this again, of tariffs. When from the beginning of the 80s was 35, it went down to 11. So the military government, with all the authority that they had, they really imposed this model. And the stages that it took was first unilateral trade liberalization. Chile, after a very strong support from the international community, including the United States, the military government did not get too much support. So Chile began to liberalize by themselves trade and got ready for the next stage, which was to develop a strong links with the rest of Latin America in the 90s, and then free trade agreements successfully negotiated with mega markets like the US and the European Union. And in the 2000s, with a strong orientation towards Asia. Chile is a very active member of APEC. It had a trade agreement with Singapore, New Zealand, Brunei, China and India. We already have signed agreement, and Japan is in negotiations. Also, it moved into the more sophisticated innovation leap into knowledge society, the trade strategy forming part of a global strategy to promote the present in international network for innovation, reinforcement of link between trade policy, productivity, technological upgrading, and human capital formation. Think big with global vision, international alliances, entrepreneurial sociability, etc. There is really been, it's very much part of the culture in Chile that we need to go global, and that you know, we have huge programs of scholarship to send our young academics, our students, our young people overseas. Basically, the idea is to show Chile. I got 5 more minutes, quick. Now, but this export model has got some weaknesses, and here I'm quoting one of the leaders in our trade negotiation, Mr. Rosales, in some parts. Our export model still have high concentration of commodities, primary products, copper, forestry, fruits, wine, etc. There are weak linkages between the export sector and the rest of the economy, which cause distortions in the economy because there is, of course, predilection for export industry and non-export industry is neglected. There is still very low participation of the main employers of the country, which are the small and medium business. I'm not going to praise them too much because otherwise I will sound like McCain. But they are the main employers in Chile, but they are not really participating very advantageously in international trade. Distortions in labor income between export and non-export sectors. Workers in the export sector can have access to better incomes, and that causes a major disparity with those that are not involved in the export sector. There is also distortion in labor force availability. Everybody wants to be employed at an export-related industry. Let me just jump more. During the five-year period since the enactment of the U.S.-Chile Free Trade Agreement, for example, there was a tremendous increase in exports for Chile and in imports from the United States. And there I quote some figures. But also it brought tremendous problems, this particular FTA, one of them being the deregulation of OSH protection, the deepening of inequality of income distribution, environmental degradation associated with primary production, and limited access to medicines and other technology due to IPR restrictions. Very strong, this is a very recent headline from September about the United States, Mr. Michael Keller threatening that Chile will be punished because of the intellectual property rights, and that's one big fight that is going on with Chile. Now, let me see here. I'm going to jump here because I only go, let me see. Okay, okay, that's fine. No, it's good. Now, what are we doing? As I said at the beginning, we are just waking up as public health people thinking about this. This is just initial. But we are doing certain things at the University of Chile, which, by the way, is the largest public university in the country, and we do have a responsibility to do that. I mentioned there are some areas. Department of Environmental Sciences is studying very seriously water rights policies. They are doing it in collaboration with Brazil. The Biomedical Sciences Institute has been studying the toxicology of productive processes. Our forestry sciences department is studying the effects on native forest protection and soil of the soil and timber industry. We in the School of Public Health are studying the tobacco issue, particularly the role of advertising in tobacco. We are doing epidemiological studies on chemical contamination, psychosocial health among workers. One of my young colleagues here presenting mental health in migrant workers, another of my young colleagues here is presenting on that tomorrow. But we do need to do much more. And I propose that we need to set priorities. We need to develop our own capacities. We need to develop a standard. We need to translate research into practice. Above all, I think we need the solidarity of those colleagues here in the United States and in Canada who are already concerned and have been studying this issue for several years to help us grow in this direction in the southern tip of our continent. Thank you very much. Comments.
Or we can wait until the end and we'll have a second presentation to discuss
one. Daniel, I came in late. If you said this, the influence of the Chicago School of Economics, if you discuss it, don't bring it up again, but and how that's affecting your work on public health because of the total free market orientation you had, at least for a significant part of your recent history.
Yes, that. Yes, as I said, we, Public health concerns have been absent. Environmental concerns have also been absent. Although our environmental colleagues have got a much stronger voice than we have, and we have to learn from them. But really, this is a field that is dominated by economists, and we also need to find allies in the economic sciences as well. Because they really predominate this field.
Yeah, here in the United States, the groups that have been most active around free trade issues have been environmentalists, but also the labor movement.
Mm.
And I'm wondering what's the status of the labor movement in Chile and whether they view this export model as a good thing because it produces jobs or
mm-hmm. anything. Or yeah, only 10 to 11% of Chilean workers are unionized. So it's a fairly small union movement after a history of very strong labor movement in Chile. And they are also very good potential allies. They are becoming more and more outspoken in relation to the difficulties and all the problems that free trade agreements are causing. So the CUT, our central trade union, is a very important future ally for us.
Thank you.